This podcast may contain strong language and potentially sensitive themes. We hope you enjoy the episode.
Hello and welcome to the Talking Theatre Podcast, the podcast for you if you love all things theatre. I'm Luke.
And I'm Tom.
And each episode we get together to chat to theatre professionals, emerging theatre artists, and lovers of theatre in general.
Basically, our podcast aims to celebrate why theatre is so great with people that love theatre.
Exactly, and this week will be no different. And coming up, though, think some of this.
Who am I? What even does it mean to be Nigerian African? And I'd asked a bunch of people, and I remember asking my dad first, and my dad said, before I'm a human being, I'm Nigerian. And I was like, that's wild.
Well, there'll also be a bit of this.
In the compressed time that we have, because it's a fringe show, movement was another way for us to explore a sort of, through a different avenue, aspects of their relationship that maybe we can't communicate through spoken language.
And even this.
I kind of set about then kind of looking at, well, how would I do this? Like 12 characters in this play. Well, there's actually more characters, but I whittled it down to a mere 12.
So thank you very much for tuning into this episode of the Talking Theatre Podcast. And let's just get on with the show.
Hi, mate. How are things?
Hi, yeah. No, things are good, man. Yourself?
Yeah, I'm not bad. Thank you. Not bad. I managed to get to the theatre in the past week, which is very exciting.
Did indeed. Tell everyone what you want to see.
I went to see the current version of Romeo and Juliet at the Globe. And thankfully, I managed to get a seat. And the reason I say thankfully is because we had a lovely case of unplanned pathetic fallacy, in the sense that it started tipping it down just as Juliet was, taking her sleeping pills and as Romeo was killing himself, which I thought was lovely, but obviously probably not planned for. But yeah, it was, I've been thinking long and hard about this since I went to see it, really, because, and I said to you, didn't I, on the train on the way back, it should have been a 5-star show, and it just wasn't. And I don't want to dwell too much on the negative aspects, because there was a lot of positives. I mean, the sound design, and I'm sure we might talk about that maybe in a future episode, was just immense. It really brought together the whole play and actually gave it a character almost in itself. It was brilliant, even to the point where what should have been the party kind of came more of like a clubbing style cabaret event, where the band was essentially on the stage playing with the actors, and they kind of rebranded it. So there was a part where Juliet sang, and from what I can remember, I think Paris or Tumult, they probably played the same character, came on and also sang. And it was a really kind of uplifting atmosphere. But yeah, I mean, it was one of those things where it could have been good. And I am kind of skirting around why it's what let it down a little bit. But
well, I mean, extent. I haven't had nearly as exciting a week as you, but I did get a new chair.
Did
which
you?
Was the highlight of my week.
Wow. I mean,
it means there won't be any more squeaking on the podcast. Where I don't know if anyone could hear it previously, but my chair was an absolute nightmare and I was tilting constantly to the left, but it's all fixed now. So we've had Romeo and Juliet and a new chair. It's been
and
a hell
this
of a week.
The listeners have really been in for a treat. They've been in for my theatrical experience and then your new chair. But again, you are in for a treat this week, and hopefully you listened to the episode a couple of weeks ago where we had our first Camden Fringe episode, and it's very good to see some of the success that's come from both that episode, but also from the shows themselves. We've seen a lot of very, very positive reviews. So hopefully sit back and enjoy the second bunch of selected shows on this week's Camden Fringe bonus episode number 2. Our first guest today is the artistic director of Imaginaphoria Studios and the director of their play Asso, Mo Kurundi. Showing at the Hope Theatre between the 16th and 22nd of August, set in a British university hall, Asso focuses on 3 students, Tukumbo, TK, Timoleon and Mediator, as they help Mediator with their dissertation paper to measure how African. As TK and Timoleon argue their definition of African and what it means to be African, both characters relate to their decision on their experiences and how their reactions from society and family. It asks the question of how African makes you African enough. And here to talk a little bit more about it is Mo. Hi, Mo. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you guys doing?
Not bad. Thank you. So I guess we should just jump straight into it. Tell us a little bit more about the show and how it came about.
So that's a really good story. Like I did tech yesterday and someone asked me, what's the show about? And I said, the easiest and funnest way to explain is, it's three university students getting drunk, arguing about, one-upping each other about how African they are. That's basically the, in the house party. Like, it's a vibe. In the longer form, it's three students from variations of African countries. So the mediator, whose name is Harper, but we call a mediator in the script, is from Kenya. TK Tukumbo is from Nigeria, and Timolayan is from South Africa and Nigeria. The argument is really that TK, who's from the diaspora, so he's brought up in London, lived in London his whole life, and Timna, who's lived her whole life in Nigeria and has grew up with her South African mom, who's now come to England for university and is the housemate of the mediator, end up having this debate. And in Timna's heart and her spirit, she's like, you are beneath me. You're nowhere close. You can't speak your language. And TK is a lot for him because in his whole life, he's been questioned about his blackness, his Africanness. So they end up having this debate. And in his heart, he believes, I quantify and qualify what African is to me or you or whatever. Now, where the show came from? The show came from, so I was born in London. I moved for summer holiday to Nigeria. It ended up being 11 years of my life. And when I moved to Nigeria, I remember I was defiant. I was like, I'm English. I'm British. I'm not Nigerian. I'm British. And then I came back to England for sixth form. I went to sixth form in Nottingham, well, Long Eaton. Yes. And it was predominantly like white school. And I was like, I've never felt so Nigerian in my entire life. And through that, I went to uni in Preston, again, predominantly white university. And I started questioning like my blackness and how Nigerian is. And when I was younger, I was very devoid. So I was like, oh, if it's a problem, I'm just going to leave it. Go away. So I avoided ACS. So that's African-Caribbean Society. I remember when I was in like second year, people would ask me things like, hey, Mo, I didn't know you had black friends. And I was like, what do you mean? Like that's a bit odd. Those kind of things. And I just shoved it aside because like, I didn't really think about it. I was like, I'm me. I don't really care. Like I'm nice to everyone. So it doesn't really matter. And then when the Panini started, Panorama, Panasonic, I started questioning a lot about myself. I think this started from last year. I went through a long process of trying to realize who I am and stuff. Like I had a really traumatic like 2019. And in the process, I wrote a show called Unapologetically I Am, which is a one-man show about self-love and acceptance. And I took that to Lagos Fringe. And that was amazing because my dad could see it. And like, it was about me dealing with my mental health and everything. And one of those things that I questioned was, okay, I've understood my mental health and like me loving myself and everything, but who am I? What even does it mean to be Nigerian African? And I'd asked a bunch of people. And I remember asking my dad first. And my dad said, before I'm a human being, I'm Nigerian. And I was like, that's wild. But my dad is like the most Nigerian person you ever meet ever. And I love it so much. Like my dad would be the kind of person to tell me when I was younger, like, remember, you're Nigerian. Like when you, wherever you go, they will see you as Nigerian. You are black and Nigerian. And when you're younger, you kind of push that side. But like, it's very poignant to me. So I ended up going on this exploration of asking a bunch of African people, like, hey, what does it mean to African to you? And everyone had different situations. And I guess it's quite morbid. Like, it's fucking morbid. There are a lot of people who will talk about, like, getting beaten. Like, oh, yeah, did your mom hit you with a wooden spoon? Or, like, did you do that punishment? And I was like, this is horrible. But, like, shared trauma is hilarious. So we all laugh about these kind of things. And I was like, there must be more. It has to be more than this. So I ended up writing the first act of Aso. And it was just the beginning of the show. TK, Timlane, and the media just having a debate. And we did that on Zoom. It went really well. We sold out. We got 5-star review. I'm going to write the second half of this show. A lot of my shows prior to that were very, like, I won't say morbid, but very serious. So when I wrote the second act, I was like, okay, I'm going to write like me. But I have to keep the comic value of it. And it was so, like, liberating to, like, talk about all these things that I've heard and experienced.
That's amazing. That's a great story as well. Like that's amazing. Have you had the cast on from the very start, and has it been the same one throughout the whole thing, or is it a couple of changes here and there for the Camden Fringe show this year? Or
so the first show, the Zoom, and the one in December, we had this ad same three actors. So this is how, as I told you, I was trying to be as flamboyant as possible. So Omolade Wey came from America. She's from Charlotte. Phillips Francis was from Nigeria, Lagos. And Reese lived in London, just measly London, you know. And they did the Zoom performance. And then when I was like, I want to do the live version, Omolade and Phillips were like, but we live here. And I was like, it's fine. I'm going to fly you down. So I flew both of them down to England. Wow. Gave them an Airbnb. And I was like, we're putting on the show. Like, I'm fully going for it. Omolade obviously went back to America. Mm. Phillips lives in Coventry now. And he's married. So that kind of opened up a lot for me, because the show, when I did it, was very much circled about being Nigerian. And I wanted the show about being, about how Africa makes you African enough. So when I, obviously Phillips couldn't do it and Omolade couldn't do it and finances couldn't like cut it anymore because I can't be flamboyant anymore. I was like, okay, cool. Now it's opportunity to open it up because I really want to open up to other African countries. So right now we have a girl called Deborah Kure, who's Kenyan, who plays Phillips' role. Zipporah is doing a South African mom, a Kenyan friend, a Nigerian dad, a stepmom from Hull. So it's very more versatile. And Omolade's role has been taken over by an actress called Rochelle Soares, and she's amazing. But yeah, so new cast. Apart from Reese stayed on. So
he's still in London, I suppose, so it makes, sense to keep the same one.
He's committed to the cause.
And so how have you started rehearsals with the new cast then? Has it all sort of kicked off and going, or?
So rehearsal started in June, because it's a long play. I'm not gonna lie. It's 69 pages. It's a lengthy play. Mm. And especially for the mediator, you're playing 8 characters. So that's
intense.
And then there's like stops and starts, and like it's so complex. So right now we've just done the Zoom rehearsal. We did our tech yesterday, as I said. And then next week we have 2 weeks intensive. That's like blocking the show.
Amazing. So if anyone wanted to come along and watch this show, where can they get tickets? Where can they find out more? And where can they follow along with the company and yourself?
So you can follow us directly. If you go on Instagram, it's called Aso The Play, A-S-O The Play on Instagram. And everything's on there, like the links and everything's on there. If you want to follow the company, please follow the company, because we make great work. Other than plays, we also do other things. It's Imagiphoria. So that's I spelled this so much that I should be really good at it. IMAGIPHORIA Studios. Imagiphoria Studios.
We'll whack a link in that one as well. Like, yes. In the description, just in case.
It's a long one. And on in Twitter, it's Imagiphoria Stu, STU. And Facebook, if anyone still uses Facebook, it's Imagiphoria Studios. If you want to find tickets, you can find it on all the links in our bios. If you want to find tickets, you can either go on the Camden Fringe website, what's on, just type in ASO, A-S-O. Or if you go to the Hope Theatre website directly, you'll find it there also. If you're just in the Highbury and Islington area, between the 16th to the 22nd of August, before 8 p.m., I will be outside flyering like the true director I am, just trying to get people to see my show. That's where you'll find
me. Well, thank you so much for coming on. We've loved hearing about the show and the company, and we're excited for you. So good luck with everything that you're doing. And we hope to hear from you soon.
Definitely, definitely.
What's the worst thing that can happen on your driving test?
Forgetting to check your mirrors.
Stalling the engine.
Run a red light.
Getting your car hijacked? Shut Up and Drive. A new play by Roddy Lynch.
Directed by Laura Dunyon.
Playing at the Lion and Unicorn Theatre from the 16th to the 19th of August at 8:30 p.m.
Book your tickets now at thelionandunicorntheatre.com.
Our second guest today is a director of Disturb the Universe's play Lovesick, Marley Hacko. Showing at the Hen and Chickens Theatre on the 17th and 18th of August, Georgina Barley's Lovesick weaves together dialogue, movement and poetry as it looks at the extent to which our organs hold memory and explores the strong connections we forge with those that save our lives and those that leave us behind after death. And here to talk a little bit more about it is Marley. So, hi Marley, how are you doing?
Hello, yeah, I'm doing good, thanks. Thanks very much for having me.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. It's an absolute pleasure
for you to be here.
So I guess the best place to start is just tell us about the play. What's it about?
Well, yeah, you kind of covered it there. And I have to say, it's actually quite hard to talk about this play without feeling like I'm giving too much away.
Too many spoilers.
Yeah, exactly. But yes, Lovesick is a piece of new writing by Georgina Barley. And it's about the relationship between a woman who receives a heart transplant and her surgeon. And it explores how these characters navigate the external factors that kind of increasingly complicate this strong connection that evolves between them. I think that's probably the best I can do without giving too much away.
Very, very succinct. Very nice. Interesting. And how's it been going? Have you had rehearsals been kicking off already and well into the swing of it?
Yes, actually. Yeah, we did. So we did an R&D in June, it was. Yes, was it June? Yes. And that went well. We mainly used that to explore the sort of physical side of the play, because as you read out, there's movement in it. So we kind of used that to find a physical language for these characters, but also look at some of the movement transitions that we've now weaved into the naturalistic scenes. So we did that, and yeah, now we're fully into rehearsals and rehearsing the actual scenes of the play. So it's very exciting.
Amazing. So talking about rehearsals, tell us more about how they've been going, what you've been doing, what the process has been like, really.
Yeah, well, the process has been just such a joy, actually, because as I mentioned, we unfortunately did have to recast between the R&D and the rehearsals. But the new actor we have on board is just brilliant. And both her and Georgina, even though they haven't known each other very long, just seem to work so well together. And obviously, you know, they are carrying the whole play. And it's quite a sort of intense relationship that unfolds between these characters. But they've just been, I mean, I just leave every day feeling so lucky to be working with such talented and just brilliant people, really. They've been so willing to go with whatever I've thrown at them. We did quite a lot of text work at the beginning, which I was slightly worried that Georgina would be a bit like, kind of know my own play quite well, don't really need to do this.
Yes.
But I kind of checked in with her a few times and she just kept saying, oh, it's so useful. So that was very reassuring. And then since then, I mean, getting up on its feet has just been so much fun, really. I feel like I've been with the text quite a long time now, because I developed it with Georgina over a few months. And obviously we were just talking about it. And so actually seeing characters in a room coming to life is just so exciting. Really nice to be back in a room working with people, I have to say.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's the main feedback we've had from most people doing plays now. It's just, it's nice to be in a room and not on Zoom doing rehearsals. It changes the vibe completely.
Completely, yeah.
So the cast and crew then, how did they all come together? What's the company like and sort of the story of the company and crew?
So I should probably explain a bit about how I sort of got involved with this, which essentially a few months ago now, I posted a tweet looking for new plays, which is actually how I met you, Tom.
It is.
Brilliant play, Blue Bottles. But yeah, I essentially put a tweet out just because I wanted to find some new work. This was kind of mid-lockdown, just wanted to see what kind of stuff people were writing, really. Were people writing about lockdown and coronavirus, or were they writing about things entirely different? But I expected to get very few responses because I can't say I have a huge Twitter following. But actually, I was overwhelmed with the number of people that sent me their scripts. And through that, I found some really great plays. but that's how I found Georgina's play. So she got in touch with me and said she's got this play, Lovesick. And she wrote me a very nice message saying that this version of the play that she sent me was one that she wanted to return to. She was also interested in incorporating movement, and she knew that I did some movement stuff as well as kind of just straight directing. And I read the play and I immediately was excited by it. I just thought it had so much potential and actually felt like it could be a really big play, that maybe we could go on to develop and be sort of a big 2.5-hour drama. But yeah, it just felt like there was lots of scope for development, and I could see like the writing was really strong. So I basically had a meeting with her, and then we kind of took it from there. And in my head, I sort of had this goal of applying to the Camden Fringe, because that felt like a good time frame. And I sort of thought, oh, by August, maybe things will be starting up again. But I was sort of, you know, that was kind of an arbitrary thing, but it just sort of happened to work out that she did want to apply. And we took it from there. So I then got our producer, Adele, on board. And we just kind of got together and started working out how we were going to make this happen. And then got together a creative team, which is actually mostly, yeah, pretty much an all-female creative team, which has been nice. Yeah, and then I should say Georgina is also an actor, and I always knew that she wanted to be in the play. Mm. And she plays Sarah, the woman that gets the heart transplant.
Amazing.
Does that answer the question?
Yeah, no, very, very much so. So in terms of the direction of the piece, how have you sort of taken your own style into it? Or is it very much leaded from the script? Or how have you approached the direction of it?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I am both someone who loves text, and for me, the text is always the most important thing. But I'm also really interested in movement and how the body can be used as a really useful tool as a way into text. And so it was really exciting when Georgina actually mentioned that in her original message to me and said, I'd like to incorporate movement, because that's something I've done before and I really enjoy doing. And I think that it can be really powerful. And I guess it feels like it works particularly well with this play, because it explores quite a lot of big themes and quite a sort of complex relationship between these two characters. And so it felt like in the compressed time that we have, because it's a fringe show, movement was another way for us to explore a sort of through a different avenue aspects of their relationship that maybe we can't communicate through spoken language.
So the show itself is on where and when, if people would like to go and watch it?
So yeah, so our first run is on as part of the Camden Fringe, and that's the 17th and 18th of August. Mm-hmm. And you can get that's on at the Hen and Chickens Theatre in Islington. And you can get tickets by going to the Camden Fringe website and just searching Lovesick. But we're actually also on again in November at the Hope Theatre. And that ticket link is not out yet. But if you can't make it in August, but you want to come, then look out for the November run ticket link.
Amazing. And in terms of, you said earlier that the way you stumbled upon this script and this process and everything is through Twitter. What are the social handles of yourself, the company, the play, whatever? Where can people contact you or find out more about the show itself?
So I think we're pretty much on everything. So on Instagram and Twitter, we're Lovesick Play. But then I'm just Marley HC, I think, on Twitter and Instagram.
Amazing.
So yeah, any of those.
Yeah, no, I must say it's been fantastic sort of chatting to you, obviously outside of this, about various other playwriting things and directing things and dramaturgy and everything. And just reaching out to other creatives and stuff on Twitter can lead to amazing things, as you have done now. You are directing a play at the Camden Fringe, which is going on elsewhere afterwards. So sometimes just a simple tweet and a message can go a long way.
Yeah, I definitely think so.
And in terms of the big wide world of theatre, is there anything else that you're sort of working on at the moment? Is there anything else you're doing?
Yeah, so I have been a bit involved with your play Blue Bottles.
Yeah.
And the next main thing I'm doing is another piece of new writing called Proud that's due to be on at the new Wimbledon Theatre Studio at the end of October, beginning of November. So yeah, we're now in the process of trying to get together a creative team for that. So actually any sound designers or set and costume designers listening, please get in touch.
we'll wait your Twitter handle and everything, it'll be fine.
Yeah, so that very different play. It's an all-male cast, and yeah, but it should be really exciting.
Well, thank you so much, Marley, for coming on and chatting to us today. It's been fantastic to chat again and hear about the show. And best of luck with rehearsals and the show. And then the one afterwards as well, because it's not just at Camden Fringe.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Brought to you by Ellie Shaw and Caroline McEvoy. Don't quit your day job. One quit a day job to spend the last year training to be a clown at Goulier, a prestigious performing arts school in France, and the other spent the last year working from home in her pyjamas. Can you spot the difference? Running at the Hen and Chickens Theatre, 3 to 4pm on the 21st and 22nd of August. If you'd like to buy some tickets for this show, head to the Camden Fringe website.
Our third guest today is the creator and performer of Ox Productions' play Twelfth Night in Lockdown, Orla Sanders. Composed of 60 minutes, 12 characters, 7,500 words and one actress, this fast-paced comedy with a love triangle deals with a case of mistaken identity and a pair of yellow stockings. Created initially during the first lockdown in April 2020, Orla performed the whole of Twelfth Night live on Facebook to raise money for PPE for Brighton and Sussex University hospitals, where her sister works as a COVID nurse. Now coming to the Etcetera Theatre on the 23rd and 24th of August, Orla will once again take this raucous Shakespearean comedy as she did during lockdown all alone, but this time with a live in-person audience to watch her pull it off. There's a lot of love, a lot of confusion. It all gets straightened out in the end, well, hopefully. And here to talk a little bit more about it is Orla. Hi, Orla. How are you?
Hi, I'm great. Thank you. How are you?
Very good, thank you. Very good. So I guess let's just jump straight into it and kind of unpack a lot of what I've just said. So how about you take us straight back to the start and how this idea first came about?
Okay, so when back in 2020, the year's all merged into one now for me. I was like, God, this was 2020, that was 2019. Yeah. Yeah, back in 2020, when we initially went into the first lockdown, I think it was in March, my sister, Cliona Dunn, was and still is working down in Brighton there as a COVID, and she was assigned as a COVID nurse. And one of the things that became really apparent was that the hospitals were woefully under-resourced when it came to PPE equipment. And, you know, at the time, there was a lot of fear and a lot of panic around the virus and how deadly it was and how it could, like, affect any age. They just really didn't know what what the potential dangers of the virus were. And my little sister was going in, you know, to these wards, which were basically going into the lion's den, and not being supplied with sufficient equipment to protect herself. And so I was incredibly worried and panicked about her and her safety. And I run a lot. And on one of my runs with my husband, I was like, I really want to do something for Cliona and to show my support and to do something, because I was just sitting at home feeling pretty. So I was like, what can I do? I'm just an actor. So then I decided, okay, well, you could do a performance to raise money for the hospital. And then I kind of started thinking about, well, what kind of performance could I do? Because, like, at the time we're in lockdown, I was, you know, by myself. And then you're like, what medium can you use? Like Zoom or Facebook? Like, what could I do? So I kind of first concentrated on what kind of play I would like to do. And I knew that, and because I work in the arts, so like a lot of my friends were furloughed and worried about money, and I think there was just this fear around money at the time as well, and people being cautious about spending money. So if I'm going to ask my friends to donate money to me to do something, it has to be a feat of some magnitude. And I love Shakespeare and I'm really into it, and over the last couple of years I've worked a lot on Shakespeare, and I kind of thought that Shakespeare presented the technical and vocal and just difficulties that I kind of felt matched this feat that I would need to kind of pull off. So then I was thinking about Shakespeare and all the different plays and what I would like to do. And I don't know about you guys, but like during the first lockdown, I felt like everybody just felt really stressed and fearful, worried. And I do a lot of comedy. So I was like, I know I can make people laugh. Like, I know that for sure. Yeah. So I was like, I definitely have to do a comedy. And then I was like, well, if I'm going to do a comedy, Twelfth Night worked because there's already an awful lot of confusion in Twelfth Night to begin with, you know, at least at any one time, you have got one character playing two characters in the play. So I kind of thought this could be really funny. You know, it's like me not just playing 12 characters, but playing a character, playing another character in the play. So I kind of set about then kind of looking at, well, how would I do this? Like 12 characters in this play. Well, there's actually more characters, but I whittled it down to a mere 12. So I think one of the first things I decided was that there was no way that I could do this all by myself. I needed some support. I needed a team behind me. So I turned to my good friend, Danae Cambrook, who is a director I've worked with on Shakespeare. I worked with her on Othello in the past and on a play called Ugly, where I did a multi-role playing. Mm. And I have a lot of experience doing clowning and multi-role playing. And so Danae kind of has experience in that area as well. And she's just such an amazing director. And I was like, I'll see if she would be interested in taking on this journey with me, going on this journey with me. So then the second person that I thought I desperately needed was Amy Lawrence, who's a movement director I've worked with a lot in the past, because I knew with 12 characters and just me on a tiny little screen moving back and forth, I would need some movement in there to help me kind of physicalize the different characters and really distinguish them from each other. And we worked away on it and decided to perform it live on Facebook, which was fantastic. And we got a great reception and I raised £730 for the hospital. Wow. Yeah, I was like, initially I was like, maybe if I can raise £200, it would be great. The play went really, really well and got an amazing reception and people just loved it. Fast forward to the end of 2019, Brighton Fringe asked me if I'd like to perform it down there because it was to raise money for the hospital down there and whatnot. So then in beginning of July, I did a couple of shows down at Brighton Fringe in front of an audience for the first time. So that was really, really amazing. And
yes.
On its feet. And now I'm going to Camden Fringe for 2 days with it. So yeah, it's constantly moving and growing and evolving. So yeah, excited to get it out again on stage and see what people think.
Wow. Absolutely.
You said briefly earlier that you love Shakespeare and that you've had experience with Shakespeare in the past and so on. Why do you think Shakespeare now? Is there a reason that you've sort of chosen that Shakespeare is one of the big plays or something? Is it more a challenge or is it some sort of more reasoning behind choosing a Shakespeare play?
Yeah, because I only really got into Shakespeare in the last few years and I've worked with this company called Bard City. I always found it really intimidating and I was quite scared of it and I really didn't find it all that accessible. And I come from a very working class background, so I always kind of felt like Shakespeare was for posh people. So I started working with this company called Bard City, and they do these training courses called Shakespeare in a Week, where they present you with this challenge where you're given, they pick a play and they give you your part and they give you a week to learn your lines. And then they give you a week to rehearse it. And at the end of the second week, you have to perform it to a live audience. And I did that, and the first time I did it, I think it was just because the pressure was off, because there was no time to worry about it. You just had to jump into it and really rely on your instincts with Shakespeare to go, what's funny, what's not funny, da, 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 da. And I found that I was really good at it. And so because I've kind of gone through this like awakening with Shakespeare over the last couple of years, I really wanted to share that with people and let them access it in the same way that I have. And and I knew that I could make Twelfth Night really, really funny. So yeah, I really kind of wanted to like let people experience Shakespeare how I've experienced it. And
absolutely. Yeah. So obviously you said that you did quite a lot of work kind of understanding what every single line meant. But on top of that, I guess you had to, learn every single line. I mean, I said in the introduction that 7,500 words, 12 characters and 60 minutes straight. So how did you actually come to learn that many lines in presumably quite a short amount of time?
Yeah, I know. I kind of worked on it full time over 3 weeks and just went hammered at the lines. I'm a very physical person and I do a lot of physical theatre and that kind of thing. Mm. So I learn my lines through movement. So I try to add movement to lines so that like words like touching my head, if a head is mentioned and stuff like that. So I try to create a dance that goes with learning lines. And then once I got into rehearsals, especially for the onstage piece, the physicality has really exploded now. Like I was saying to somebody recently, it's like an unseen dance because you're physically changing from one character to the other. And I use about 15 different props in the show. Every single character has either a costume piece or a prop that they use. We did hours and hours and hours alone of just walking through the, every single step, every single movement, so that what may appear as like, oh, this hat appeared out of nowhere, or this like wooden spoon just appeared, has actually been the result of, I mean, multiple hours, what we call, instead of choreography, propography.
Yes.
Like, wow. Really fine-tuning it and getting it really clean. We wanted to put on an amazing show that was really, yes, polished, has incredible movement in it. So it wasn't just about like the learning the lines and the 12 characters and doing all of that was just the first part. The difficult bit was really when we got into rehearsal and making it a show that was incredibly memorable and that people were gobsmacked with. And I really love every single character. And I think that comes true because I find every single character an absolute joy to play.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for coming on. But just so people can keep up to date with what you're doing, what the company's doing, what the show's doing.
Yeah.
Feel free to plug any social handles or so on that people can do to follow.
At Oxprod, it's Ox Productions. So on Instagram and Twitter, or Orla Sanders, also on Twitter and Instagram. They're kind of like my two main. I'm mostly on Instagram. But yeah, so we're hoping that after this show, I'm going to trying to bring it to Edinburgh next year. So
amazing. Well, thank you so much for coming on and chatting to us today. We hope the very best for the production and any rehearsals that are coming up soon.
Yeah,
best of luck.
Thank you very much.
And if music be the food of love, then I guess play on. So that marks the end of this episode of the Talking Theatre podcast. And a massive thank you to all of our artists for taking the time to speak with us today. I actually think that I'm confident now in saying that theatre really is alive and kicking and really ready to make an impression amongst wider society, certainly at the fringe kind of level.
Yeah, no, I was going to say pretty much exactly the same thing. I think I've said this before as well, that it's exciting to see stuff starting to come back and the life start come back in the theatre. But I think we've reached a point now where it's not starting to come back. It is back.
It just is.
And yeah, I think it's a fantastic world to be back involved in. You know, it's just, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And we hope that you have not just enjoyed this episode, but actually the two bonus episodes that we have done for the Camden Fringe. If you haven't listened to the first one, we do encourage you to go back and have a listen to it, even though some of those productions might have already had their showings already. But there's some really interesting work in there that hopefully might be seen at further showcases or further venues, I should say. And if you have enjoyed this episode as well, then please be sure to rate it and subscribe and even tell your friends about us. You know, the more theatre lovers we can reach, the better. It builds a better and bigger community.
Yeah, and you can follow what we're doing currently on Twitter and on Instagram at the Talking Theatre Podcast. And as well as that, if you're interested in coming on for an episode and talking about theatre with us, then you can email us at thetalkingtheatrepodcast@gmail.com and we will reply as soon as we can.
So all that's left to say is thank you very much for listening. And we hope to see you all next time. Goodbye.
Adios.